once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
It wasn't fill the wall up?
Close the wall.
It is. It's close the wall up, yeah. Not fill the wall up.
Right. We can ask Billy, the Shakespeare fellow. But
this is a Shakespeare fellow?
Yes.
William?
William. Billy. Oh. Billy, yeah.
Oh, okay, well, anyway, once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour on this Saturday, December the 13th, of the year of our Lord, 2014. And if you'd like to give us a call in here and ask about something that has to do with money or finance or economics or things of that ilk, 773-1400 would be the number in East Bell County.
Otherwise, it's 1-866-597-1400. And I'm going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. It has to do with encryption and security and all that good stuff. But it has to do with Sony. You have followed a little bit what's happened with Sony. There was a big hack where Sony's entire computer system from one end of the country and world to the other looks to have been completely violated. It went from one end to the other. All the data seems to be available to the hackers. And they've been releasing it in increments. One of the many things that are going on here is things like, you'll appreciate this, the children of employees of Sony. These aren't necessarily high-level employees, although that's the stuff that gets the tabloid journalists going crazy about who got paid what or whether or not a girl got paid less than a boy or so on. The addresses and medical information about children of employees of Sony have been released with names, not redacted. I mean, this is as bad as it gets. When you know the ins and outs of a 3-year-old child suffering with cancer of a key grip at Sony, and the reason why they had them in their memory banks is because it's one of the things that companies, when they're negotiating insurance rates with a big insurance company, they want to know why it is the insurance company wants to raise the rates. So this information is extremely private, and these hackers, and this is something very different from the normal hacker community, have been very focused, and they've been releasing this information in a timely way that is interesting. They've said, basically, you need to stop a movie or we're going to release data. And as they've been doing that, as they've been releasing the data, it's been at a massive rate, 3.5 gigs of raw personal and professional data for Sony, which I'm sure that Sony's competitors are scooping up. But there's some background here that needs to be laid out. One, I mean, we got questions here. How did it happen? How is it we prevent it from happening in other companies? You know, JP Morgan Chase was hacked last month or month before by the Russians, it appears to be, but none of their really sensitive information was grabbed. They are under a different standard for their encryption, the government-approved standard, and the only stuff that got grabbed by, apparently, the Russians was this stuff that they didn't encrypt that was not, it was just names and addresses rather than social security numbers or any of that. So there are thousands of social security numbers available now from the Sony hack. Let me give some background about Sony, though. Sony is kind of the target of all targets for hacker organizations. They are the most hated of companies in the world to the hacker community. And some of you may remember this and don't even realize you remember it. I'm sure you remember this, but don't remember that you remember it. Back in 2005, there were a whole series of lawsuits against Sony over CDs, because they sold about 22 million CDs to the public that waited to be copied. And sometimes that copying just took place if you copied the file onto your computer to listen to it, rather than have the CD in the tray while you were installing a program or something. They installed basically a digital rights management set of software. That's what they called it. Anybody else in the world would call it malware. What it did was it If it sensed that it was being copied, it destroyed the ability for your computer to ever copy a CD again and immediately started transmitting your listening history to Sony. So this was a lot of lawsuits over this. The Bush administration got involved. It was a big deal. So Sony basically drew a big target on itself to all the hackers in the world because it hacked the general public. It hacked 22 million legally purchased CDs. So then you move forward a little bit, and they've been hacked quite a few times, little bits here, little bit there, between 2005 and 2010. 2010, a 17-year-old guy named George Hotz, H-O-T-Z, hacked the iPhone. He was the first person to take the iPhone and make it available to other networks besides AT&T. It was a big deal. It's called jailbreaking now, and basically he was the first one to do it. He's 17 years old. And the PlayStation is a part of Sony, and the PlayStation is this preferred machine. A lot of hackers love it if they can get Linux to run on it. It is a really fast and beautiful machine. But Sony removed the ability to run Linux on it because they kept getting hacked by people using their own machine. So they removed that ability, and this fellow who just jailbroken his iPhone and made a big deal out of that said that he was going to hack the PlayStation. He was going to say, I want to install whatever I want to install on it. So 3 months later, he did it. He was the first one to do it. It was a big deal. Sony immediately sued him, and sued him at massive, massive, like hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars type suit, which got settled out of court. And part of the settlement, we don't know if Mr. Hotz wound up paying Sony anything, but part of the settlement was that he promised not to hack any more Sony objects. But once again, this is a big target. He did make it completely open source how he did it before the lawsuit, so the hacker community had all the information they needed. Not long after this lawsuit settlement, where George Hotz agreed not to ever hack a Sony item, the Supreme Court ruled that Sony was wrong, that Sony didn't have the right to protect the machine that somebody else bought from them from modification of the new owner. It's like saying if you took a Corvette and changed the paint or changed the engine of it, if the manufacturer could sue you for doing it. It's silly. You own the machine. You can do what you want with the machine. You can hit it with a hammer. You can change the chipset. You can do a lot of things. Now it has to run functionally. If it's an automobile on the road, you have to follow some tests. So Sony lost this big lawsuit. They are the bad guys. They were chasing down people that actually bought their product and suing them for using their product. Okay, come forward. The big hacking group Anonymous. You're familiar with Anonymous, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anonymous is a American, mostly American group of hackers that has been infiltrated by the FBI now and had a big shattering, and there's little groups of them. And you, every time Anonymous does anything, there's these leaks from different members of Anonymous. It's not really well coordinated. It's a bunch of people that are individuals. They're all rebels by themselves.
They're anonymous.
Right, and they're anonymous, and they get together. But they have this code of go in and right a wrong for the world. They think Snowden is the greatest thing in the world, and anybody that disagrees with Snowden, they might hack them and put a message up saying you should agree with Snowden. In this case, they hacked Sony, changed the PlayStation Network, which is a huge network, and put a big message up there basically calling them corrupt and their business model was wrong and that they were pirates and so on, and that they needed to get their act together. So Sony's been hacked since then, since 2011, many dozens of times. And what's interesting about this is that the hackers are using the same trick to get them every time. The IT department at Sony is not coordinated. So every branch of Sony has its own separate little computer system, and the IT department only fixes its own hack and doesn't go to tell all the others what had happened. So a hack that hits one branch of Sony, 2 months later hits another branch of Sony and gets all the information as well. All right, so come forward to today. And all this information is coming out about, you know, this is way beyond what Anonymous would do. Anonymous would never post the personal information of children who are ill. They just, they've got this code, and they're supposed to be like the black hat knights in shining armor that are out to fight the evils of the corporate world. Well, now you've got a movie coming out from Sony, which is basically about the assassination of the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un. And the North Koreans said, don't do that. You need to stop it. If you don't stop it, there will be consequences. Well, they kept right on going. They did alter some scenes that were out there. Instead of having his face melt, evidently that part of the scene was removed. Instead of having bits and pieces of his head fly everywhere, that part was removed. They still wanted to have the head removed somehow. So this is all part of the movie in there somewhere. And Sony said, no, we're going to do it. However, the CEO of Sony emailed the director of the movie and said, can you tone this down? Now, we're celebrating the Battle of the Bulge today, 70th anniversary. Korea remembers Japan's invasion 70 years ago. They remember it very clearly. And Sony is a Japanese company. And Sony's creating a movie about the assassination of a North Korean leader. They see this, I mean, the North Korea's favorite enemies are the United States and Japan. These are the people that, I mean, they can cause their entire country to get up in arms over a slight misstatement by the United States or a slight misstatement by the Japanese. In this case, it is a movie about the assassination of their god king, their great leader. So, this organization hacks Sony and does it using exactly the same techniques that have been used before, but then puts malware on Sony, which is a little bit ironic if you think about that. It's software that Sony, they use the encryption that Sony has on its own system to sign it so that everybody in Sony thinks it's Sony that's putting this malware on their computer. And it just releases all the information, and it's doing it over time. This is another example of a government institution doing hacking, doing cyber warfare. There is no extra leakage going out on the side as to who's doing it or what they're doing it. It's a place called Dark Soul, and the only other targets they've ever had are in South Korea, and it's all based on North Korean animosity. So there's no doubt about who's doing it. It's Dark Soul. The North Koreans say they're not part of our government, but we sure like them. And Dark Soul, and that's pronounced the same way Seoul Korea, or spelled the same way Seoul Korea is sold, that kind of Dark Soul. They're out there basically holding a major company for ransom to prevent one movie from going out. So it's a free speech issue. This is the same sort of thing that a lot of people have trouble with where the cartoon of Muhammad comes up and that's, you know, there's upset all over the world and violence. This is the same thing. Prevent one movie from going out, and Sony said no. Well, now Sony may disappear as a company. And I want to be careful about saying that because I realize they're a publicly traded organization. But there's a lot of stuff that they should have done differently in their cybersecurity. They should have updated. They should have protected those passwords. There's a lot of laws that say how they're supposed to protect that stuff, and they didn't do it. So if it's not happening already, it is about to happen. There's going to be class action lawsuits out their ears. They're going to have people suing them from one end of the country and one end of the world to the other about discrepancies in pays, about privacy violations, about all kinds of things that they shouldn't have had on their computer. Civil rights, if somebody got fired, they now have access to every email that was ever written about them to say there was prejudice in the firing. And if anybody out there is a business owner, if you have an employee and you have a private conversation amongst the management about the performance of that employee and it's at all derogatory, that can be used in a court of law if it's available to be used. So Sony has not just hit a hacking issue. Their entire corporate model is at stake now. And what's more, today there's an announcement that said that Sony has had to stop filming on several of its projects because they're having trouble with the accounting software that they use to pay people with. This is more evidence of the hack. This is a big deal, and Sony has been... They basically go around kicking every anthill possible, but they don't have any bug spray. This is, to me, we have gone... This is a world where there used to never be locks on the doors, basically. And they went around knocking down other people's doors and running into them and didn't lock their own. So there's a bit of irony in this, but at the same time, Sony has written, the value of Sony is probably not in any way stable at this point. The number of movies that were released that are supposed to come in for basically download that are supposed to be big money makers that they've already put money into, huge amounts of money into, that they may not get much return out of. They have such a big model. And it's been fractured across the board. They're either going to have to completely change the way that they do business or they're going to go out of business. So there are lots of ways to protect yourself online. But if you are not, if you don't have antivirus software, anti-malware software on the computer, on your computer, then you're contributing to this as well. Because most of the attacks came from zombie computers that were taken from other people elsewhere in the world. Anyway, that's my wrap up. I think from the individual level of a small child who is sick and who is being exposed all the way up to the grand global scale of North Korea is fighting back against the tyranny of the United States and Japan. That's the scope of what we're talking about. This is a government organization that is attacking individual people in the United States and Japan. There you go. There's my soapbox. My feet are very clean because I was walking on that soapbox for so long.
That's cool. To change the subject a bit, by the way, the telephone number's in here. If you would like to throw in a question or a comment or something, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Mentioned this last hour, but for those of you who missed that, the Dow Jones Industrial Average last week dropped 3.78%. The S&P 500 down 3.5%, and so on. The 12-month return, however, Dow is up about 9.7%. The S&P 500 up about 12.8%. Now, there's something to be noted here. We haven't actually received any panicked calls on this, which goes along very nicely with the fact that because the price of gasoline is down, people are not worried about the fact that the stock market dropped. That's what I read today, and I thought that is really odd, but I'm not gonna fight it. One of the things that's come out recently in some studies about the wealth disparity, and I talked about that last hour a little bit, the wealth disparity in the United States has gotten a lot more pronounced since the Great Recession, or whatever we're calling that thing that happened in 2008 and 2009. And one of the major issues that has caused that, there's several, obviously one of them is that a lot of people who had jobs before won't get them back because they've been replaced by computers. But there's another major issue that particularly affected people in the middle class, and that is market timing. Apparently, there were something in the tens of millions of people in the United States who, during the downturn, got out of the stock market. The downturn, 2007 to 2009, at some point, generally pretty near the bottom, they got out of the stock market. And to give you an example, and I'm certainly not in any stretch of the imagination suggesting that anybody should invest a big chunk of money in the S&P 500 stock index. I'm quite against that, by the way. But let's just say that you'd had an investment in the S&P 500 stock index in 2007, just before the market fell, and you got out 50% down at the bottom. Let's say you had $100,000, so you got out with $50,000 at the bottom and put the money into a savings account, and apparently, or CD or something with effectively 0% interest. Apparently, a lot of people did that. Something like 24 million people did that. Today, you would have very carefully sustained your 50% loss. So your $100,000 has now become $50,000, which meant that you have that the net worth in your household is down $50,000 from that event. The people who stayed invested through that downturn and who have simply ridden it back up again using as an example an S&P 500 stock index investment, which, by the way, you couldn't do. You can get pretty close to it with an index fund. Have now got $130,000. The people who got out have got $50,000. So there's now a very substantial 80% differential between them. Whereas before, they went into the recession with approximately equal net worth, they came out with a huge disparity in net worth. And we're actually seeing, according to the studies that are reported in the Wall Street Journal this week, we're seeing that is a major, major effect, and that some of those people are just now thinking about getting back into the market. Some of them are still not back into the market. Matter of fact, the predominant sense among the people who got out and who would otherwise be thinking about getting back in, well, the market has gone back up again now, so I'm not going to get in. Incidentally, that is a powerful indication we're still in a bull market. When you have people who got out of the market at the last down market who believe the market is too high at this point, the one thing I can tell you about that particular set, that particular class of people, is they are so consistently wrong they provide an indicator, and if you do the opposite, you'll probably be in pretty good shape. But there's been a lot of questions about where the wealth disparity comes from that has emerged following the recession, and this is something you can use very practically in your day-to-day activities. Most of you are listening, I'm sure, are people who don't get out during market downturns. But the price we pay for a high long-term return in the stock market or in any market environment is high variance. In other words, you'll see higher highs and lower lows in the guy who is getting a low return. And if you think those are unacceptable, then you need to go for a low return, because otherwise you wind up with a negative return. Now, that sounds really complicated, but it really boils down to this. If you're expecting a return higher than zero over a long period of time, after inflation and after taxes, you need to grasp firmly that there will be occasions when you will see a 50% drop in the value of your investments. There will be many occasions when you see a 30% drop, and frequent occasions when you see a 10% drop in the value of your investments. The only way you get the higher return is to tolerate those drops. And a little while back I told you the key to tolerating those drops, one of the keys at least, is to have enough reserve. If you go into a retirement situation where you're drawing on that money, is to have enough of reserve to go a year or 2 years, preferably in that time frame, depending on how aggressive your portfolio is, without touching the actually invested portion of your portfolio. That's the things in equities, the things you intend to see grow. In other words, during a downturn of the market, the ability to ride out that downturn in your portfolio without touching the part of the portfolio that dropped is a key to having the confidence that you need to ride through these things and not lose money. So that's just if I were to give you a piece of wisdom today from Jeff McClure, that's the piece of wisdom from Jeff McClure today. We are seeing a drop right now that's irrational. It's there. It's very real. It could last for a while because people can be crazy for quite a long period of time. But at the same time, we're seeing that our economy is doing better than any other economy in the world. it's doing really quite well, all things considered. We're seeing that the cost to the consumer in the United States is dropping. The cost of shipping things is dropping. The cost of flying airplanes is dropping. That's, by the way, deflationary. Consumer price index was actually down for November. So that's a deflationary situation, which could scare you, except when you look deep inside of it and you find out that the reason it was down was because the price of fuel is going down. It means Jake is probably right, which he always likes to hear me say, that we are going to have a Christmas shopping season that will surprise most economists by how big it is. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we're going to stop and do some commercials so that not Times Square. What did the name of the... Something Square.
Yeah.
Anyway, KTEM and whoever owns them, whose name I just blew out of my own mind, can actually make money with this station so that we can stay on the air. And we'll be back after these words from KTEM sponsors.
Are you...
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we had a caller who hung up. They just didn't have a whole lot of patience.
I think they probably didn't want to be on the air.
They probably, yeah, as soon as we came out of commercials. Hey, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I guess the big news of the week is that oil is now below about $58. And there's a fascinating thing going on. From an economist's point of view, which makes me an uber geek, actually.
Yeah. Let me give the actual number for the oil price there at the close of...
It's around 58 on Texas and 62 on Brent.
57.49 is the American version of that, and it's like 60-something on the Brent suite, I believe.
62, yeah. Before we get into that, we do have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello, Jeff and Jake.
Hello.
Hello, Flying Fox.
Yeah, you know who it is.
I do.
Well, first, I've got two things. First, I want to compliment Jake on his very interesting discussion of the computer world involving Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Sony, appreciate that.
I happen to... be one of those that I think Sony is a source of quality, but ultimate arrogance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. Having said that, now
I have a PlayStation.
Told about was you noted that this is the anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge.
That's yes. Right.
I wonder if you knew who it was that broke through, the individual leading the breakthrough into relief of the Bulge.
I used to know that, and I don't know his name because...
His name was Colonel Abrams.
Yes.
Abrams,
later General Abrams, and now the tank was named after him, the M1 tank.
He was a tank commander, regimental commander as a colonel at that time, and they later named this Abrams tank after him.
I'm glad they didn't do it before, because if they'd named it after him before him, then we didn't have the technology.
Yeah, we had... Actually, I had the person who was the driver of the lead tank in Colonel Abrams' regiment, who was my sergeant major when I first was commissioned, and I can't remember his name right now. He had the Medal of Honor, and the reason he got the Medal of Honor is they lost everything, lost all communications. After they broke through, he was the only tank left in his battalion, and he assembled a crew, pulled, got ammunition, and went back, and was shooting the Tiger tanks who were blocking the way in the rear, and got the Medal of Honor for that. So anyway,
well, that Battle of the Bulge, of course, they made a movie about it, and
maybe more than
it,
one.
You have to read several sources to get a really good picture of that. And one of the things I'd like to inform you of was the fact you saw in the movie was when Eisenhower was looking for somebody, and you know Eisenhower waited 2 days before he even admitted that there was a breakthrough. And then when he called for help, and Patton said he could do it in 2 days, he could make his plan, and he could be there in 2 weeks, they laughed at him. Eisenhower, Bradley, and the others, they laughed at him. But then he did it. And when he did it, when he accomplished it, then, of course, the English general took all the credit. But later on, Eisenhower said that was the luckiest thing that could have happened to us when the Germans made the breakthrough. Because then he was quoting what Patton had said. He said, let them go. I'm going to cut them off. I'm going to pinch them off. We'll kill all the SOBs, which they did. You know, but we lost 10,000. They lost 70,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, that idea that Eisenhower finally came to the decision that Patton had made in the beginning. This is not bad luck. This is good luck. We're going to get them now. So I thought I'd just add that to you.
That is very accurate based on my study of the Battle of the Bulge. So good for you to share that with us.
There was one other little point. If you read, now I can't call his name, Ambrose.
I have.
Stephen Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
His account of the that part of the war included quotes from individuals, officers and enlistedmen both, that were involved in the battle. His book is a lot of quotes, and one of the guys that he pointed out in the Battle of the Bulge was an enlisted man that was considered so lucky. And the fact that he literally ran through hail of machine gun fire to reestablish our own machine gun that had got blown out by a tank, a German tank. And he did this two or three times, running back and forth across in front of the German fire and never, ever got hit. And he survived the war, stayed in the army, and as a paratrooper, he jumped out in a training exercise from 1,000 feet, and his chute didn't open. Then he pulled his reserve chute, and it didn't open. And he hit the ground flat of his back in a freshly plowed field and suffered no broken bones. That
yep.
fellow's lucky.
Yeah.
That explains a lot of things that happened to other people where they had the negative luck.
Yes.
Well, thanks for calling. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right.
I thought you needed a little excitement in your program here, but
thank you
again to Jake. That was good, Jake.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Your ending remark was that they're either going to have to, they're likely to have to change their whole company management.
There may not be a Sony when this
right.
is over.
Yeah.
Or there might not be a Sony. I think that was a very interesting summary. People need to think about that.
Yeah, it's when it comes down to a company being destroyed not by an act, well, I guess they could have prevented it if they'd been stronger in their cybersecurity, but they make good products. They make good movies. They make good machines. They do these, you know, high-quality things. They've got a lot of arrogance.
Yep.
But they're being destroyed because of an outside act unless they fix it. I mean, it's still possible, very possible, that they wind up being better out of this. They come out of it being better than what they started with. But right now, it doesn't look good for them.
And then hubris is a word that dropped out of use.
Let's sue them attitude in this country. So you're probably right, Jack.
Well,
everybody but me can sue them. I don't have any.
No, you can sue them too.
I think that idea that you or that fact, I presume it's the fact that they put out a CD that could wreck somebody's computer just because they tried to copy it.
Yeah, that was back in 2005, and
that's dirty poo.
Right, and well, it was if you consider it. It's not even something people think about Sony today, and that tells you a lot about what's happened in the Internet over the last 9 years. We've gone from 2005 to 2014, almost through with it. If Sony did something like that today, they would probably go out of business. But they did it in 2005, and there were no rules around it. And what's happening today with the cyber attack, they're, except in very few areas, health standards and financial organizations, there are no government standards on what cybersecurity should be used. Companies do not coordinate with each other. In fact, that's kind of a big no-no, because you might let secrets go to other companies. So there's no coordination on this security issue, which is, this sounds to me like the United States before we had the FBI, which is a guy could rob a bank and go to across a state border and laugh at the people on the other side. We're in that realm right now. The FBI gets sort of involved, but the company has to report the breach. And this is a big one. When financial data or health data is released by accident or by a hacker in the normal corporate structure, there is no deadline on how long they take to report it. They can do it as short or as long as they want. They have to have reasons for it, but the government hasn't said you got to report. So if your social security number, if your bank account information is at your employer and they get hacked, and it's at your employer if they do direct deposit, if they get hacked, they don't have to tell you about it until they've got it figured out on how they're going to control the PR. There are some major issues that need to get solved here, because this year we're looking at more purchases being made online than in stores. Mm-hmm. You know, the financial information has a lot of security around it, but as we saw from Target, there's still back doors, and Target had some big problems.
There's other companies that have been hit since then, too.
Yeah, and the PlayStation Network went down in 2011, and they had their own banking system as part of that.
Well, I'd like to take you back about two paragraphs to the idea of copying, and copy protection. That's a very interesting. If they put out intellectual information or entertainment information or whatever, but it's information on a disc called a CD or DVD,
mm-hmm.
and they copy protect it and make it against a federal law if you copy it.
Right.
However, it is only it's only information. Now, you know, I've written a few books.
Right. Yeah.
And how about a federal law that prohibits anybody except the one that purchased my book? No one else can read it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, no, it's not going to happen. But what's the difference?
Yeah, and if you think about a library, if you've got a book sitting that you wrote and it's at the library, and someone goes to the library and they pay the library a fee, sometimes it's a monthly subscription. Sometimes not. Sometimes it's an annual thing. Well, they show up at the library, they check out a book, they read the book, the author gets paid no more money. Or what used to happen when I was younger is if I really liked a song, I'd wait for it to be played on the radio and record it. Or maybe I'd call a radio station and I'd say, could you play this song? They'd play it, I'd record it. Now, if I really wanted the song in its perfect form, I would buy it. And
Jeff, that was against the law. When they first came out with little recorders that you could do that, all of a sudden it's against the law to copy off the radio. You know, you got a VHS to copy movies off the TV. That's against the law. And they finally just, you know, they gave up on trying to enforce a videotape recorder.
Right.
Recording, you know, they jump around and trying to protect the source and all the money people. But
let me say something else here, and this is really important. One of the greatest strengths of the United States, one of the absolute most driving forces of our innovation, is the protection of intellectual property. The fact that we can make a pharmaceutical drug or a computer or a piece of software, and then copyright it and have the rights to that and the profits from that for a very long period of time is what makes the United States 90% of the new innovations in the drug world come from here. If you look at the tech companies of the world, if you label off the top 200 tech companies, maybe six of them are not American. If you go down the list, the reason that that exists in that state is because we protect intellectual property. Now, Japan has lesser ability to do that. China has almost none. There's very little innovation that takes place in China. They copy other people's stuff. If we aren't careful about hacking and cybersecurity, all of that intellectual property, the things that we hold dear in profitability, our ability to take an idea that we came up with and make a profit off of it, can go right out the window. So this is a big issue. It's one that is an attack right at the roots, the fundamental aspects of who we are as Americans, is who owns something. And while I think Sony was really, really horrible and dumb, there's a lot of words I would use off of the radio that I'm not going to use, when they put their digital rights management software on the CDs, or when they sued somebody for changing what operating system ran on one of the computer boxes that they sold. They still invented those boxes. They still paid for the creation of those songs, so they are due the profit that comes from those songs. So Napster was a form of theft, but a library is not. We need some real serious clarification and long thought on what intellectual property is and how it holds up in the era that we live in. And what happens generally is laws get made 20 years too late. We can get ahead of this if we're careful. We can say, this is kind of an oxymoron to say Congress can get ahead of itself, but they should. They should be looking at this very closely.
Jake, they can't even close the border on Texas, so I guess they've got a long way to go.
All right, thanks for the call.
In the parking lot at Fort Hood, and I got to go inside. So
okay.
Thank you for taking my call, and we'll see you later.
Thank you for calling.
Take care. This is one quick thing. The immigration keeps getting brought up, and just one of the little facts that I like, little facts that I can throw out there that people can get a hold of. Last year, 2013, if Texas had a GDP, its gross domestic product, and it does to some extent, it would have been about $1.4 trillion. So that's with a T-R, not... That's huge. That's very, very large. And we're having a lot of immigration. People are coming to us from Guatemala and from Mexico and so on. Mexico's GDP in 2013, the whole country of Mexico, was $1.26 trillion. Texas as a state had a bigger GDP than Mexico as a country.
Yep, and Mexico has a lot more people.
A lot more people. This is why they want to come here, because just the same way last hour, at the beginning of the hour, you talked about a map of the United States by county and what the average wages were, and I said it's a good idea if people are upset about their wages to go to a county where the wages are higher. Well, if I see that as a smart idea, and you're thinking about living, if you were to live in Mexico, you're living there, and you look at the maps, and you see that Texas, as one of 50 states, has a larger gross domestic product than the country that you're living in, there might be a little bit more opportunities to make a living bit north.
If I could take the subject off in a little different direction here.
Sure.
There's a couple of things I wanted to raise. Number one, on Wednesday, if you read the local paper, you may have read about a Senate report on the by the Intelligence Committee in the Senate.
A local paper. I read that.
But it was in the local paper, it was carried in the local paper, Temple paper.
Do you mean the CIA report?
No, not the Senate report.
Yeah, the Senate report on the CIA.
Right, and it was one of the things that has come out since then and is coming out in more and more detail is that was an extremely one-sided report.
Yeah.
And it was extremely inaccurate. And it's one of those things that if you read that and you think that the United States was, and I saw some reports and some pictures, for instance, they were talking about waterboarding. They showed pictures at Guantanamo. One of the key things to understand, for example, is there have been no incidents of anything that even smells like torture at Guantanamo. A lot of misinformation's out there. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I talked about this and said I was going to follow up on it after the call, there's some interesting, tremendously interesting things about what's happening as the price of oil falls down below $60 a barrel. And one of there's a really good article in the Wall Street Journal, and I think it's in Real Time Economics, on how this occurred and why. And it's not for any of the reasons you might think. I mean, it's just, it's such an amazing thing. Among other things, the gasoline subsidies in many countries are being removed because the countries simply can't afford to pay them anymore. So they're allowing gasoline to be sold to the public at its actual price rather than with government subsidies on it. This has caused a dramatic reduction in the use of gasoline throughout Southeast Asia. At the same time, the United States is now producing enough oil to be self-sufficient, and that really has shifted everything. But one of the great ironies that's going on here is the Russians felt they could do expansionary activities, such as in Ukraine, because they had a lot of money. And they had a lot of money because they were selling a lot of oil. They're one of the bigger oil sellers in the world. And as the oil, as the sanctions and the oil price fall has hit Russia, the ruble has fallen to, since the collapse in 1998 of the ruble, it has fallen to the lowest price against the dollar it has been since then. It's like 58 rubles to the dollar now. And it started out on a one-to-one basis. Now, here's an absolutely fascinating thing to me as an economist. The Russians have been unloading, they have been dumping U.S. treasuries. They have been dumping the dollar in an attempt to drive the dollar down against the ruble or the ruble up against the dollar. And people are continually afraid of some foreign company or foreign country dumping dollars on the market. The dollar has continued to rise as the Russians have dumped. Now, this is the fascinating thing behind it. Why has it begun to rise? It was only this week that some economists managed to pry out the reason behind it. As the Russian government was selling dollars on the open market, guess who was buying them? You got any idea?
The Russian people.
The Russian people were... So the dollars weren't even, what they were doing is they were, as the Russians were selling dollars and buying rubles with the intention of getting the ruble price up and knocking the dollar down as a strategic move by Vladimir Putin, he directed it, the people in Russia were busy buying dollars and selling rubles. So in essence, the people in Russia actually bought more dollars than the Russian government sold, and the ruble continued to fall. Now, at the end of the week, the democratically elected, kind, gentle, and beneficent Vladimir Putin announced that people would be arrested for speculating against the ruble, which may slow the process down, but there's a general acceptance that he would have to arrest almost everybody in Russia.
Mostly his friends. Yeah, most of his friends would have to be arrested because they've been storing their rubles in dollars.
So this is a funny thing, and a thing that started down with the Eagle Ford, and I actually had the name here in front of me a few minutes ago, the fellow who actually started the concept of fracking as we know it today. Fracking, the in Texas, Wildcat oil well driller inventing fracking winds up being the most effective weapon we can use against the Soviet Union.
The Soviet Union? Russia.
I mean Russia.
Yeah.
And Iran and Venezuela. The enemies of the United States are getting beat down because a guy in South Texas decided he could find a better way to drill for oil. I love it.
Right in the middle of all of this as well. The Bitcoin made a big splash in the world stage at the end of last year, and then it's kind of disappeared off. And it is now being held steady at about $350 a Bitcoin because so many rubles are flowing into the Bitcoins.
We gotta call.
We all really don't have much time.
Okay, you got to call her on 773-1400. Make it really quick.
He's gone.
Well, okay, good.
Well, that's we've got a.
We got to get out of here.
Yeah, we got only less than a minute left.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail during the weekend. During the week, we have live people who answer the phone at 947-1111. It's the Personal Wealth Coach, 947-1111. Or
you can reach that same voicemail toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can also email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage to listen to podcasts. That's thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can read about our philosophy and see our faces made for radio.
Yeah, that's probably an absolute truth. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.